Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we talk all about our favorite comic book team of all time, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and we have emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, it's top of the show. Like, you could stop right now and just send us an email just like that. Just do it. Nothing to stop you. Or you could listen on a bit further. Then you could jump on Facebook, because we're on Facebook. And if you wanted to read stuff about the Doom Patrol and our show in particular, there's mygrezadventure80.blogspot.com, which is run by our good friend Doug Zavisha. And many, many, many of our episodes on iTunes, and all of them are available on Stitcher Radio and Podbean.com, I believe.
Correct. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. G'day, Wilfred. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and today my Comicosity article pick is one called Kirbyology, Jack Kirby is My Religion, and it's written by Mark Peters, and in this article he takes us through, he talks about how Kirby impacts him, but he also shows us pictures of Kirby art, which are really, really stunning. So there's a piece from 2001, A Space Odyssey, the adaptation of the movie that was done by Kirby before I think he'd even seen the movie, and and some really amazing pieces from the New Gods, etc. So check it out. And so, you know, you can read the words, but you can also see the pictures, and that's one of the things that Comicosity does very well.
Indeed, indeed. That's very cool. So anyway, Paul, how has your week been?
My week has been fine. I've been reading a little bit of Marvel comics.
Okay.
Heard of them? I've got some stuff in the library, and I read the first volume of the infamous Iron Man.
Oh, okay. Which is,
you remember years ago when Dr. Octopus became Spider-Man?
Yes, he was the superior Spider-Man, yes.
Yes, this is Dr. Doom becoming Iron Man, and it's not as good.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, Dr. Doom, he's an okay character. He's a bit weak. He's, you know, there's not much to him. Mm. Just a shout-out to Professor Allen. I'm not sure if I want to keep reading it. But, I mean, the art is very nice. It's okay. The old Alias team getting teamed up again.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, what about you?
Before I go on, I just out of curiosity, did you read Superior Spider-Man?
Yes, I read it all the way through.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's probably my favorite Spidey storyline ever.
Ah, yeah. It's pretty cool.
It kind of got me back into Spidey for a while. So...
Are you still on the Spidey train?
No, I'm not. There's very little of Marvel that I'm reading amongst all the other stuff that I'm not reading these days because comics, expensive. So I've still got a bit of Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel in my to-read pile, which I haven't gone near in weeks and haven't added to. But I guess one thing I did in the past week, I went and saw Blade Runner 2049.
Ah, okay. And 2049 is the running time, I believe?
Pretty much, yeah. It is definitely a film I have seen.
I was keen to see it, and I think I said to Rifty, hey, if you want to go see it, I'll make the time. But then I heard the running time of the movie, and I was put off, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. We went and saw the 7 o'clock session, and by the time we got out, I was well and truly ready for bed. I may have even snoozed a little bit during the film itself. So, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either.
That's a magic review. Yeah.
The visuals are great. It looks fantastic. The story itself leaves a little to be desired. And it kind of meanders and it happens, but right. I'm in no rush to go out and procure a copy of said film once it's available. It's just going to be like, okay, I've seen it. Yeah.
Are you a big booster for the original?
Yeah, big fan of the original. Yeah, it was great. No matter which cut you see of it, I guess. there was maybe one moment in the film which I thought was really cool and didn't expect, but the rest of it was like, okay, it happened. It's a story. Did we really need the sequel? I don't think so. But it's done.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. So save your money, kids. Yeah. It's a film. But anyway, hopefully, as we go down on Darrington Way right now, there'll be something slightly more enjoyable and more fun to discuss.
Yep.
Cool.
But not really. So this week, if we look at what's happening in Darrington Way, well, the DC solicits came out this very day, which tell you what is coming out from DC Comics in January, and a couple of Young Animal trades, but nothing Doom Patrol-ish at all.
Right.
But don't panic, Mike, because this is just the calm before the storm, which is the Young Animal crossover with the DC Universe proper, so which starts with that. Doom Patrol, Justice League, or vice versa, is it? And ends with Justice League, Doom Patrol, or vice versa. And it has a few in the middle.
Okay.
But, I mean, I also have a theory. Doom Patrol is running fairly late at the moment, so maybe there will be an issue in January anyway. Maybe we'll get issue 10 in January, or 11. Well, maybe.
I love your optimism, sir.
Yeah. Looking at the bright side.
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I've got. It's a quiet one.
Well, it happens.
Yeah. Mm. Is that the sound of ticking that reaches my shell-like ears?
Shell-like? Okay. well, yes, in fact, it is indeed the Doom Clock.
Oh.
As we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hot little hands came out 6 weeks ago, issue 8 of volume 6, which we discussed in episode 104 and showed the return of Lotion the Cat, him changing a bit, and the relationship between him and Casey changing a bit, and it also showed the public launch of the Wonder Food shit, the best damn thing that Casey had ever eaten, and tripped her out. Flipped her out.
Yummy.
yummy shit. Issue 9 is at this stage scheduled for release on November 8th, just 3 weeks away. So let's hope that doesn't change again. I take it there are no last minute updates you've uncovered?
No, it's all the same. Right. No changes. So we've got issue 9 on the 8th of the 11th, and we have issue 10 at this stage on the 29th of the 11th, and then Doom Patrol 11 is out on the 20th of the 12th, and then Doom Patrol 12 is out on the 27th of the 12th. So 1 week between those two issues. Yeah, we can count on that happening.
Yeah. Look, you never know. They could surprise us. It could be a very good Christmas with two Doom Patrol issues.
They certainly have some lead time, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Anyway. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
This week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for a mere 12 cents American on October 17th of 1963, 54 years to the day as we record, Paul.
Wow.
With a cover date of December of that year was issue 84 of My Greatest Adventure from Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. This story was titled The Return of General Immortus and showed the villain using powerful radio waves to take control of Robot Man, forcing him to plunder an ancient Babylonian treasure trove. Oh, I was hoping I wasn't going to launch into Trevor Trove, but I did.
It's a trap. It is a trap. It's
it is a trap.
It's a linguistic trap that just hides under the leaves like a bear trap in the park. You know what I mean?
Right. Except it launches itself at my mouth. Anyway.
Yeah. Snaps.
So, yes, anyway, the rest of the patrol had to figure out a way to rescue Robot Man without triggering the bomb in his head that had been placed there by the general. Whew. This issue was part of our coverage of the patrol's first five issues in Migrant's Adventure issues 80 through 85, which we discussed all the way back in episode 5 from January of 2015. So you can check that one out for more. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
What?
Have you ever read a Superman comic?
Not in the last few hours.
Oh, I was just checking, right? Just checking.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey, and I have been a fan of Superman for as long as I can remember. In 1987, I started collecting the Superman comics as a going concern, which led me down a long and winding comic book-filled path to 2007, when I first started podcasting. Well, it's 2017, and because it's been 10 years since I started podcasting, and 30 years since I started reading Superman full-time, I thought it might be fun to start a new show called It All Comes Back to Superman. It All Comes Back to Superman will be my monthly reaffirmation of my Kryptonian faith, where I will pick out something about the Man of Steel and discuss it. Sometimes I'll be alone. Sometimes I'll have a guest. No matter how many people get involved, Superman will be the focus. It All Comes Back to Superman as part of the Fortress of Bailey Tube Podcasting Network. New episodes will drop on the 28th of every month. This show and all of the other programs that are part of the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network can be found at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
Now it's time for Doomsplaining, and this week we are delving into the first two issues of Volume 4. So we're getting right into John Byrne's run proper.
Double burn.
Yes. Twice the burn for... anyway. Yes. So issue 1 came out in August of 2004, and Paul, how about you take us... right into it, please.
Okay, so firstly, it has a cover by John Byrne, which shows it's got the Justice League in there with a giant monitor. So, you know, kudos for the giant monitor. Mm-hmm. But Batman and John Stewart, the Green Lantern, and John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, or John Johns, depending on how you say it. They're all freaking out, and on the big monitor, it looks like the Doom Patrol are attacking them.
Yeah.
So we can see a giant Rita, we can see Negative Man's energy in skeletal form in this volume, and we can see Robot Man. They're all aggressively coming towards the Justice League. Yes. And it's together again for the first time, which isn't really true. Yeah, and it says from the pages of JLA, which because this story comes straight out of the 10th Circle that we reviewed two episodes ago.
Yes.
So, dimes. Anyway, so if you remember that story, it was very recent, so I won't go through the whole thing. But this one opens with some of the Doom Patrol returning to the Doom Patrol headquarters at the old Confederate prison in the Florida Keys, known as Key Mordaz. And Grunt, the four-armed ape-faced ape, is screaming, but the girl with the mind-nudging powers known as Nudge is able to nudge his mind into a calmer state. But this calm is shattered by a massive piece of technologically ambiguous machinery smashing through the inner walls towards them. And hanger-on, who's joined the team from the JLA, Faith, who looks like she's... serving hot dogs at the beach or something in her outfit, uses her mental powers to fling the machinery straight up into the sky, where the blue-skinned weirdo known as Vortex is able to release his silent scream, TM, patent pending, which destroys it before it can fall and crush them all. And so something is definitely not right at the Doom Patrol headquarters.
No.
As they make their way inside, they pass three cells, which the team usually keep illegally detained criminals. And I say usually because three cells are now open and empty. Their contemplation is silenced by the embiggened Elastigirl, Rita Farr, smashing through the wall next to them. Anyway, 17 minutes before this, it's what it says in the caption, the rest of the Doom Patrol return to the JLA team-up mission against Crucifer and his other dimensional vampires to find their leader, Niles Calder, a.k.a. the Chief, are strung up against a wall being menaced by three vampires, which was the final page of the JLI Doom Patrol story. So it looks like the Chief arrived on his own and then half the Doom Patrol arrived next and then there's a third. Why can't they all travel together? That's what I don't understand.
That would be far too simple.
Yeah. Anyway, before anyone can react, this kid called Wormhole spends three pages telling them how he portaled his way out of the final battle with Crucifer and into the Doom Patrol headquarters for some reason and opened cells to release the three prisoners, then tried to bring through Crucifer's extra-dimensional upper management vampire bosses through an extra-dimensional wormhole. But he was tired, so only three of the vampires made it through. And they needed three bodies to possess, and luckily it just released three prisoners. So there's a beautiful bit of evil serendipity there. The three pages of listening has made Larry Trainer testy. So he releases negative energy because he's negative man, and to blast the vampires, but they turn into their possessed forms. So they're actually three super criminals now. So vampire / super criminal. So there's one called Barrage, who has gun arms.
Mm-hmm.
Megalith, who's like a metal stony-looking dude who's wearing like a metal open sandals and a metal Speedo over his rocky junk. And I think she's called Rubbermaid. I'm not really sure, but she is like a pink stretchy woman with no hair. And this leads to several pages of vampire boss battles. Excellent. Which leads in turn to a vampire Megalith chucking the technologically ambiguous machinery through the wall, where it lands back on page three.
Right.
And then Barrage blasts Richter, and she also goes through the wall, which is what happened on page seven. blasting
it all connects.
The comic.
Thank
it
goodness.
Is. It's beautiful symmetry. Anyway, it's not all Doom Patrol action because Batman, John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, and John Stewart, Green Lantern, are talking about their recent battle with Crucifer. And Batman, although he's been awake for 72 hours for some stupid reason, has a nagging sense that he has missed something besides sleep. And he asks the Martian Manhunter to read his mind to help him relive chunks of JLA issue 99. This enables him to realize there were five minions of Crucifer, but the JLA only caught four of them. So I mean, it's good he used mind control powers to remember that. almost as if one of them was able to wormhole out of the situation. Anyway. Who could that be? Anyway, the mini JLA contingent head out to Castle Crucifer, because remember, Crucifer had a castle, because the early bird catches the wormhole. Anyway. They are surprised to see Larry's negative energy appear through a portal, and it talks to them for a second and then suddenly goes feral and plunges a skeletal hand through the Martian Manhunter's chest. Oh, my goodness. Yes. So, there's a lot happening in this. Actually, no, there isn't a lot happening in there. I mean, we've got the Doom Patrol sort of trickling in drips and drabs. I don't think we get very good introductions to them.
No, we don't.
No. We sort of know who they are from reading the previous story, but we know their names. But, there's not really much context for anyone. And then there's this flashback to show the battle. So, I mean, it's clear that this Doom Patrol has been established for a while, long enough to capture three super criminals and illegally detain them. Mm. And so they've been up to stuff. And, Nudge – I'm going to get these names right. I often get confused. Nudge and Grunt are the two new characters.
Yes.
And we also have Faith from the JLA, who's a character I'm not very familiar with, who's sort of – is she joining the Doom Patrol? I don't know. She's hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Vortex, who's a blue dude, who they picked him up from Crucifer's people, didn't they?
He was one of the superpowered teens that Crucifer took under his wing, you know, manner of speaking. And he realized that, hey, these vampires aren't cool. So
these vampires that keep killing people and mind controlling and that are bad.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love the fact that this giant piece of machinery comes through the wall. It's like the size of a truck. But what's it for? Like, I always wonder this in these sorts of things. If you had a lab and someone picked up a giant piece of machinery and threw it out, surely you would go, oh, no, that's my blank, blank, blank. You know, I need that for da-da-da. And, you know, I don't know what it is. It's just a giant random object of machinery.
Clearly, it wasn't vital to the operation of the base.
It wasn't. You know,
you would have imagined half the base would have shut down with something that large being torn out of the wall and thrown through the air.
It's not like it suddenly gets hot because that was the air conditioner or something. No.
Oh, wouldn't that make the fight awkward? Oh, I'm sweating so much.
You know? Awkward, yeah. I do note that the Doom Patrol have a bitchin' jet that they used to fly around.
Yeah.
A classic return to aviation that the Doom Patrol in the beginning of Volume 2 under Paul Kupperberg and often in Volume 1, weren't, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Where we see the chief strung up by the vampires, interestingly enough, he has metal arms and a chest filled with green energy or something.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. It's some sort of exoframe, I'm thinking.
Is it? Okay.
To help keep his body working, maybe? I don't know. It's not explained at all. But yes, he's... Yeah. Possible spoiler warning, I think as this run progresses, we see more of some sort of metallic frame he wears on his body.
Yeah. But where they find the kid wormhole in their base, I love it. Rita says, I know you. You're one of the punk kids who was working for the boss vampire. So she talks like someone who's 90. and then he goes, working for? Hey, listen, chicky. Crucifer wouldn't have had a plan to start with if it wasn't for me. And then there's three pages of him telling them what happened.
Yeah.
Literally three pages.
Yeah.
You know? So it's recap, information dump, and it's pretty skillfully done.
Yeah. Yet it still doesn't really give a decent introduction to the patrol themselves.
No.
I mean, if you hadn't read The Tenth Circle and you were coming in cold in this run, you'd kind of be like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's what the names are.
It'd really bug you if you knew you suddenly dismissed a whole story that you had to read. And then it would bug you worse when you actually read it, I reckon.
Yeah. I kind of have an issue with how conveniently Wormhole turns up. And he... As crap as Crucifer was, he's made even crapper by the revelation that he relied on this punk teenager all along.
Yeah.
And, you know, Crucifer wouldn't have achieved as much as he had without this guy's metahuman power of creating wormholes. It's like, oh, so you've just undermined your own shit villain. Okay.
Yeah. So, and he looks like Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, a kind of surlier, more annoying Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, it's a slightly cooler Jimmy Olsen.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, I like the fact that Batman, he's kind of awkward about asking John Johns to read his mind. He says, you know, the way, let me see how he says it. But time is at a premium, John. You know I would not ask this unless I felt there was no other way. Your Martian telepathy, do you think you could? John, you know, it's like, I'm too embarrassed to ask this.
I'm glad he clarifies that it's John's Martian telepathy.
Yeah.
Not just his telepathy.
Just your telepathy.
Yeah. It's like, really? Could you over-explain it a little bit more for us?
Yeah. But I like to imagine that this is how it happened, that John brought Batman in close and held him by the waist, and then they went flying And then gradually Batman trusted him more and more, and then they just held hands as they were flying, and then Batman said, "Thought, can you read my mind?"
Right.
That's how I like to picture that scene that we don't get to see.
Right, okay. That's a lovely off-panel escapade.
Yeah.
I'm also a bit annoyed by the attempt at non-linear storytelling in this. I just don't see the point of it.
It's structured like a Chinese puzzle box, and it doesn't work as a single issue.
No.
Because there's time jumps between what happens in, you know, like we see Larry, you know, last time we saw Larry is in a fight, and then suddenly he's in Castle Crucifer at the end. And how this works and why it's happening, it doesn't make sense until you read issue two. Mm. And these would have been better as a double issue. Like, I think, you know, it just would have hung together better. Because, yeah. I mean, you're going to take a serious issue too, and we can see how it all connects up. And it doesn't really work in a single part.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the art is good. I mean, it's latter day John Byrne. So it's his style is, I don't know, I kind of liked his early 80s stuff more through his Superman run and stuff, you know, than the stuff he was doing in Fantastic Four. I thought that was stronger. This has, you know, it's a little less, it's got a little less flair, I think.
Okay.
But it's pretty good anatomy and, yeah, but it's.
You definitely can't fault the art. It's still good art.
Yeah. Yeah. But we do have there's a text piece in the back of the first issue, which is, it's quite long, and the first half is all about Wonder Woman getting rebooted after the Crisis on Infinite Earths, and how they took the approach of just ignoring everything that had gone before. Mm. And, you know, Superman and Batman sort of got a soft reboot, but Wonder Woman had a, you know, scrap everything reboot. And he's saying, yeah, that's what we're doing for Doom Patrol. And Dan Didio said that was a good idea, so he's to blame as well. you know, and say, you know, hey, why not? We'll do this type of, you know, relaunch as well, where we just say, yeah, nothing, everything that happened, you know, you're coming in on the ground floor. You don't have to worry about whatever happened before, which is really weird at this stage in the DC universe and in continuity and everything to say, it's 2004. We'll just pretend the Doom Patrol is starting afresh.
Yeah.
You know, even though they had a volume 3 years ago, which we're ignoring.
Yeah.
And, you know, before that, another volume, which went through to 2001, which, not that late, but you know what I mean? So they're just saying, yeah, all this other stuff, not so much.
But, my favorite part on this text page is the line, "Will it work? We hope so." Optimism. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but, I mean, I feel like there's a little bit of, you know, Byrne wants to do this because he wants to, you know, do it his way.
Yeah.
You know, start fresh. You know, and he likes to there's some things he really hones in on, like wants to explain. So, you know, the portals become a real plot point in this, that they stay open for half an hour, which, you know, is his plot way of, you know, reusing them after the fact.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very, anyway, issue two, go for it, Mike.
Okay, so issue two, I should note that the creative team is the same on both issues for this. So the cover done by John Byrne, who was also the writer and penciler on both of these. Doug Hazelwood did the inks. Jared K. Fletcher was the letterer, and Alex Blayart was the colorist. And the cover of this has the tagline, "Reborn out of disaster," and "Broken circle." So hopefully they'll get rid of the 10th circle once and for all,
maybe. Mm.
And it shows the patrol with Robot Man front and center, Vortex, Nudge, Grunt, the Negative Being, and Rita standing amongst some rubble and taking on the three villains that have now been unleashed. Rubbermaid, or at one stage she's called Snake. So, yeah, her name's never really could find. So she's there. So is Barrage and big stony metal dude whose name completely escapes me, even though you said it a minute ago.
Megalith.
Megalith. That's Megalith. It.
It looks like they're in puddles of cereal.
Well, okay. Puddles of cereal.
Well, they're up to their waists in. All three of the villains are up to their waists in something around the Doom Patrol, and it looks like the Doom Patrol are all standing on solid ground, and these people all appear to be, you know, semi-submerged in, you know.
Oh no! There are villains in my Rice Krispies.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like that.
It's worst like cereal prize ever.
It's like they're all in a ball pit made of rocks instead of balls or something. Mm. Yeah,
it's interesting. Very odd. Yes. Anyway, this issue is titled Hearts of Darkness, and it opens with a scene 3 years prior to the events of issue one and the events of the Tenth Circle storyline we covered in episode 107, where pilot Larry Trainor is getting a warning from Dr. Niles Calder that there is to be no grandstanding in this dangerous mission they're about to attempt, the first test flight of an experimental jet called the Sunrunner. The launch goes according to plan, and during his communications with Mission Control, the overconfident Larry flirts with the woman on the team, lamenting that she didn't take his offer to ride on his lap for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
The woman turns out to be Rita Farr, who tells him to stick to the checklist and get on with the mission. Good for you, Rita.
Yeah.
So Larry engages the experimental H-drive, launching the Sunrunner into a hyperspace wormhole, and promptly disappears. So a mission that was meant to take 17 minutes turns into 79 hours before the ship suddenly reappears and Larry makes radio contact, saying the ship is damaged and he's been plummeting to Earth since reappearing on the far side of the moon. Naturally, because comic book science, the ship is heading straight for the airbase that Calder and his team are in. Niles tells Larry that he must eject from the ship, as without him, there'll be no record of what happened on the mission due to the telemetry failing as soon as he dropped into hyperspace. So when Larry refuses, he says he'd rather sacrifice himself than be responsible for others dying. Niles does a chief and activates the remote eject switch, much to the surprise of both Rita and Larry. Oh, chief. He's always got some trick up his sleeve. As the parachute in his chair deploys, Larry tries to think of a way to still save those on the ground, and suddenly the form of an energized skeleton leaps out of his body. Larry realizes he's somehow able to control this being and has it fly under the Sunrunner to catch it and steer the ship to crash away from the base. With the base saved and Larry and the energy being returned to his body, Calder has him whisked away to a lab for further study. But before we learn how they discovered a way to contain this radioactive negative energy, hint, apparently it involves a GIMP mask, we cut back to the quote-unquote present day in Kimondaz, where embiggened Rita is crashing through a wall, much to the surprise of Nudge, Grunt, Vortex, and Faith. Hmm, deja vu all over again.
It's only the third time we see her crashing through the wall.
As the youths join the rest of the patrol in the fight against the vampires, Vortex has an idea after Robot Man confirms that, yes, their enemies are these vampires again from the Tenth Circle. Realizing the sun should well and truly be above them by now, Vortex blasts a hole in the ceiling, allowing rays of sunlight to pour in, which does nothing to the host bodies of the vampires. Sad trombone sound effect. But before we learn how the team overcomes this plot twist, we have an ill-timed interlude at the International Soames Lake Research Facility in Antarctica, where an alarm has the scientists there running to a room with a sealed wellhead. While there hasn't been a breach of the wellhead, the pressure inside it is increasing. One of the team members comments that this can't be possible unless something is pushing up from below. And suddenly, the seal is broken, and the team scream in terror as something climbs out of the well. But before we can see what that is, we return to DBHQ, where Niles has suddenly come to and calls Nudge and Faith to him, as he's figured out how to defeat the vampires. The two women join hands and send out a telekinetic blast of their combined powers, which literally shoves the vampires out of their host bodies, and then the sunlight turns them to ash. Oh, finally.
Ah. Andy.
Yes, convenient. Watching from the shadows and realizing the fight, along with his dreams of wealth and power, have come to an end, the teen punk Wormhole tries to escape, but Negative Man sees him and gives chase. As Larry begins to describe to the others what's happening through Negman's eyes, we learn that this is a moment that the teen villain and the energy being have emerged in Castle Crucifer, standing before Batman, Green Lantern, and Martian Manhunter. We also learn that the energies of the Wormhole portal and the negative being don't work too well together, severing its connection to Larry, sending it berserk, and attacking the Leaguers. That sort of thing.
Ah.
Yes. Comic book science.
Fitting so neatly.
Yes. With Cliff carrying Larry's body, he and Rita race through the portal, telling Faith and the others to follow them through if they're not back in 10 minutes. Thankfully, it only takes a few minutes for Larry and Negman to reunite once in the same room again, after which he apologizes to John Johns for the attack. But John says he just turned intangible, so no damage was done anyway. Phew.
Oh.
With everything seemingly wrapped up, Batman takes Wormhole by the arm, about to take him to the authorities with the rest of Crucifer's teenage misfits. But the prospect of going outside causes the teen to freak the heck out. And with superhuman strength coming from out of nowhere, he swings Batman away from him, and Rita suddenly realizes something. She quickly grows high enough to punch a hole in the ceiling, and the kid bursts into flames. She recalled that Wormhole bragged about how much help he'd been to Crucifer, and it sounded like he'd been around more years than he'd been alive, so there was a good chance he was a vampire. Huh. Fancy that. The patrollers and the Leaguers say their goodbyes, with the patrol heading home back through the portal, and then an hour later, Bruce Wayne's lawyers have bought Castle Crucifer, allowing Green Lantern to demolish it with his power ring. As Batman says, it's the best $12 million he's ever spent. And in DBHQ, Niles is congratulating the team on working well together, and he thanks Faith for staying with them so she can help Nudge learn better control of her powers. He sends the team off to get some well-deserved rest, but asks Rita to stay back. And he comments to her, "Apparently you and the others chose not to tell Nudge that I deliberately placed her in harm's way in order to lure Crucifer into revealing himself." To which Rita replies, "No. She needs to learn to trust you if she's going to be part of the Doom Patrol. Cliff, Larry, and I decided it was best for her not to know. After all, it's not something you are ever going to do again."
Stern look.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of issue two, Paul?
It ends the story of the vampire, so that's really good. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we get the origin of Larry's negative power as re-envisaged by Byrne, and not that different to the original, except this time Larry knew the Chief and Rita beforehand.
Yeah.
So Rita doesn't seem to be an actress in this version.
No.
Hollywood actress who what does she do? She inhales some weird noxious vapors that make her stretchy.
Yeah,
I like the fact that the Chief needs this data to be analyzed from Larry's trip to space, and so that Larry has to survive so they can get the data, even though the Chief will be dead and won't be able to analyze the data. So that, you know, and they go to such a point of explaining this; it's very strange. It's a burn thing that he latches onto something and just wants to explain the hell out of it and ignore all the other weird stuff around that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But the fight with the vampire, like if the vampires possess these bodies, they can't be harmed by sunlight. So,
no.
Okay, that would work in a human, I imagine, not just a superpowered person. Mm. I mean, they could have just possessed the bodies and left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and gone off and started their new vampire secret underground empire.
Start the 11th circle. Oh, wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
If only Wormhole hadn't explained it all for 3 pages, they could have got away. That's the other big change with Larry's negative energy is it can talk and is conscious, and he can talk and is conscious, and he sort of seems to be in, you know, equally in both places.
Mm.
So when it leaves him, he doesn't collapse like a, you know, a lump like he does in
no.
earlier versions, or sleep like he does in Volume 6. You know, Larry becomes two independent beings who can, you know, basically act with the same mind. It's quite strange. I was pleased to see the vampires all gone. It's good that these criminals can all be illegally locked up again in the Doom Patrol headquarters now that they've been recaptured. The chief's all rescued. Intro story over, but I don't feel like we know the team very well at this point.
We do not, no.
Yeah.
Yes, it was cool to see Larry's origin. I don't know why it was shown, though. It didn't really add much other than fill up a couple of pages unnecessarily. And he comes across as a bit of a creepy jerk. You know, when he's, Rita, I wish you'd taken up my offer to, you know, enjoy this ride on my lap, if you'll pardon the pun.
Some bit of casual sexual harassment with this test flight. I guess someone's thinking about the fact that, you know, all this creepy castle that was the vampires were using, it's not safe, we should destroy it. But you know what? They could just destroy it. They didn't have to buy it.
No.
And Batman's saying, that's the best $12 million I've ever spent. I don't think it is, Batman. I think it's a waste of $12 million. You could have helped the poor with that money.
He sure could have.
Reason for destroying this was to get rid of any portals that may exist in there. It's like, you know, you could get someone scientific like Blue Beetle in there for a day and he would have fixed all the portal problems.
And the interlude at the Antarctic base. Antarctica.
Not the Antarctica. Classic comic script writing. You have an A plot going on and then you set up the B plot, which becomes the A plot in another issue.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know why that was placed where it was in the story. Why not have that at the end as a better lead-in to a future storyline?
Yeah.
So... And, getting to see Rita crash through the wall again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we get it. You like to try and do non-linear storytelling. Okay. Move on. But again, it's a good-looking issue. You know, I really can't fault... The art's better than the story and the dialogue in this, so...
Yeah. And the paper stock is nice.
There's, some cool ads from games back in the day.
There are
some Got Milk ads, you know?
Yeah.
Why
does, like, if you're a freak, but you have to wear a mask, would you pick a gimp one with sort of, you know, very aggressive teeth and red eyes as your, you know, blend in with society face?
Yeah, it really makes you miss the bandages.
It does.
They were simple. They looked cool. They had a logical comic book science reasoning behind them.
It was solid comic book science behind it. It was very...
It was. You know, they were treated, you know, in a special radioactive chemical to contain the negative energy. You know, it worked.
You can just soak them.
Yeah. This he just looks like a creepier robot man hanging out with the team.
Yeah. You could wear a wig on it just to soften the edges, you know?
Yeah. There's a Photoshop challenge for any of our listeners. Larry Trainer from this volume with a wig on, please. We would like to see your handiwork with that.
I want to see something sort of 80s rocker, you know, hair metal.
Something. Oh, yeah. That'd make it better.
Yeah, it would be good.
But overall, it's an okay opening, this volume of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I don't mind reading it. I mean, I want to see where it goes. But I'm seeing glimpses of all the characterization being a bit off in most of the characters. Like Rita's Rita seems very much like, I'm the girl on the team, rather than, you know, I'm going to kick your butt.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Cliff is probably the one who's the least changed by this.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
His characterization is, you know, it's well done. But again, there's for a kind of simple story, there's a lot of action going on and there's a lot of characters running around.
Yeah, and a lot of them on Doom Patrol.
yeah, true. And, it's okay.
Yeah, but I'm glad we did these two together. It would have been, you know, difficult just doing one and then waiting. Because, I mean, they fit together, you know, quite intricately.
Yeah. and it's a nice way to get rid of the tenth circle once and for all.
It is, finally.
Yeah. Even if it costs someone $12 million.
Best $12 million I've ever spent.
Wrong.
Think of anything else I could have spent that on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Are we doomsplained out?
I think so.
Excellent. Let's move on to the mailbag.
And now it's time for the mailbag O' Doom, which is the part of the show where we go through the mail that we've received, if any, and we go through the answers that we received to our question of the week, which came out from the last episode, which was, who is your favourite pre-comics era fictional character? Huh. And we heard from Ryan Daly, who said, does Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter count? Sort of? No, I don't. Maybe? But he said, if not, Zorro. Zorro, yes.
I think we'd have to take Zorro. I think
Zorro is the more legit answer.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln, not fictional. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, not pre-comics, I don't think.
No.
Yeah.
We then heard from Clinton at Coffee and Comics Blog on Twitter, who said, even though he premiered in 1932, after comics were a thing, I'm going with Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, it's hard to dispute that pick.
Yeah, it's a good one.
He's a barbarian. We heard from Professor Allen, speak of the devil, Alan Middleton, and he said Sherlock Holmes. So, good character.
Yeah. Martin Gray, at Mart Gray, said anyone of the Jason, Perseus, or Theseus bent.
Is it a bent? I didn't know it was collectively they were a bent. Yeah, that's a bit of Greek mythological action. Yeah, yep. Why not? Yeah. And the Argonauts.
Yep.
We heard from, this is Rob Kelly at Film and Water Podcast, which is his film podcast about films. And he said, Tarzan. He didn't say it like that, but no, he does speak a bit like that. But he said, the original book has one of the best endings I've ever read. As far as I know, it's never been done in the 5,000 Tarzan movies there's been. I don't know how the original book ends.
Nor do I.
Maybe he wakes up and it's all a dream.
Oh, God.
That's a great ending. You're welcome, Tarzan.
Between the Pages at BTP Blog said Robin Hood and Sherlock Holmes.
I thought for a minute that was an actual title, Robin Hood and Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Deductive archery. Anyway, Craig 101, Craig R. McD, he said Sherlock Holmes as well, or maybe Robin Hood. So, yeah. Great minds, Karen and Craig.
Yep. Well done. Yeah. Kevin at Astrakis 1, who this week is going by the handle of Vane Hacker We It Item.
I thought he said Welt. Welt Item.
Oh, Welt. Okay. That works a bit better.
Yes, yeah. I think. Anyway, it's catchy, whatever it is.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin. He said, the classicist in me says Aeneas, despite his faults, and I'll always love Virgil's poetry. I probably pronounced that correctly. I probably didn't.
It's an awkward one to say, actually.
It is.
Anyway, speaking of Darren and Ruth, which we weren't, but we will, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, DS and RS, as they're known on Twitter, said Sherlock Holmes! Exclamation point. So, emphasize.
Yes. A lot of love for the detective. Yes. Ange, at Dr. Ange 70, said, Odysseus, smart guy, good fighter. King Arthur is in second.
Ooh.
Okay.
And David Ace Gutierrez, who's DM Gutierrez on Twitter, he said, seconding Arthur.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
At ArbardF09, or Bud A, Arbard said, Frankenstein's creature tops the bill. The whole list would be too large for Twitter. Renfell, the, is it Zoophagus?
Zoophagus.
Zoophagus.
Okay. Or Zoophagus.
Renfell. Zoophagus. Renfeld from Dracula wins as best supporting character, but I can't leave the Shadow out, although I prefer the comics incarnations of him.
Cool.
Yeah. Nice mix.
Yeah. We heard from Andy Macken, who's Andy INDK, and he said, normally I would say the first thing that I think of, but this time I put some thought into it, and the answer is to be Biggles. Ah. Whoa, that's left field. Yeah, Biggles, the aviation hero.
Yes.
World War One. Mm. The best Biggles story is Biggles Flies Undone. That's the good one.
Right. At Michael underscore A. Wagner, or Ascani Sun on the Twitters, said Zorro.
Zorro.
It's a cool one.
Slapping Zs on people, or Zs, depending on where you come from.
Hmm.
Hmm. Joe Crawford at J3K underscore C said The Lone Ranger.
Nice.
Nice. Excellent.
At Harold Lord of Four, or Harold County, provided us with the answer, Sun Wukong or Jack the Giant Killer. That's an interesting mix.
Yeah, wow.
Were you going to ask who Sun Wukong is?
Yeah, I was.
That's the Monkey King. Monkey Magic.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Magic. Ah, Magic Monkey.
Yeah. From an egg on a mountain top.
Nice.
The funkiest monkey that ever rocked.
Good. Legion Lad 67 said Jesus, and then rethought the answer and said God. So, offending the religious people amongst us. Very good.
Mm. Yeah. Paladin of the Green at Grant Richter 09 said the Spider, Master of Men. And provided us some artwork from the old Pulp series, showing the spider on the cover fighting off some robotic murder machines.
With a little flamethrower, by the look of it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Lynxwood said the Human Torch, who I wouldn't call pre-comics exactly, but maybe I'm missing something there.
Maybe.
Maybe.
David Collins at Old Ben One said, first thought was Robin Hood, but Zorro has the tops.
Nice.
Yep.
And then LC Comics, LC underscore comics on Twitter, said Hercules from Greek mythology.
Nice.
Hmm. Mm.
Yeah. At Quiz Lacey, or Scary Steve Lacey, during this Halloween.
Scary name.
Mm. He said, pre-comics character, Beatrice from Much Ado About Nothing, especially the Emma Thompson version of the mid-90s movie. Okay.
Yeah, nothing wrong with Emma Thompson. She can act.
Yes.
Yeah. Another one, we got John Hall at JD Hall 0116, and he said Robin Hood. Sure, he began as straight-up criminal, briefly in the mythos, but shortly after became the iconic hero we know and love.
Mm. Mm. True. Over on the Facebook page, we heard from Frank Gill, and he said, King Arthur and his knights. Oh, and Merlin too. I'm into the whole swords and sorcery in medieval times. What's been your favourite movie with King Arthur? King Arthur starring Clive Owen, for me. Runner-up would be Tarzan, because his adventures inspired me to go out into the jungle clothed only in a loincloth and carrying a knife for extreme sports survival. Well, if I added Tarzan, I absolutely must add the Lone Ranger and Tonto, and also Mexican hero Zorro.
Nice.
Wow, that's all-encompassing, that one.
Broad range.
Yeah.
Yeah, we heard from Tim Stiles, Big Tim, and he said, Abraham Lincoln. No, wait, Frankenstein. Abraham Lincoln again, yeah.
Jared Driscoll said Fu Manchu, only because of his mustache.
Yeah, and Edwin Latorre said The Shadow Knows.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
How about you, Paul?
This is I should have thought of an answer before. I'm going to say Dracula. Dracula.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not inspired at all by the vampires in these Doom Patrol issues, but he is a cool character. And, you know, has some longevity.
Sure does.
Yeah.
He's been around for years.
Untold ways of interpreting him, except for the untold one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I'll have to go with Zorro,
I think.
My dad was a fan, and I remember as a kid having you remember little golden books?
Yes.
I had a Zorro one of those. It was one of my favorite books. You know, this masked man galloping around in the desert on his big black horse and, you know, righting wrongs and fighting for the common man. It was really cool.
Hmm. And Zorro is also a really good David Bowie song.
Is it now? Right. I've been mispronouncing it and miss-singing that song all these years.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, dearie me. Anyway, I think that's it for the mailbag and for the show. So next week, we are going to be returning to Volume 2 and looking at issues 82 and 83 from Rachel Pollack, getting ever closer to the big finale of Volume 2. And we have a new question of the week. What is that question, Paul?
It is, who is the best fictional robot? Fictional robot, not real robot, not a cyborg. I don't want no brains inside these robots, okay? Just get it right, people.
Okay, so with that said, does that exclude Cliff Steel Robot Man automatically?
He's a cyborg. He is a cyborg. He should be called Cyborg Man, not Robot Man. But, you know, that's the man who is a cyborg. That's what he should be.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay. So full proper robots.
Full robot. Full absolutely robot. No organic material at all.
Okay.
Unless it's, you know, blood left on their fists from killing someone. If they're an aggressive robot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, as always, if you want to get in touch, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or get in touch via the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, or you can check out Doug Zavisha's excellent posts on his site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's us done for another show. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
It was good to get into some burn.
Finally. It was. It's a change of pace.
Yes. Anyway, that's us done. Thanks for joining us, guys. We will catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.